My name is Christine Clements. I'm a paramedic in New York State as well as Florida, as the state of Florida. And I'm going to talk today a little bit about an infant death, 4.5-month-old infant. We got called to the scene as the paramedic unit coming into a first responding fire department in an area where everyone knew everyone else. When we arrived to the home, the firefighters told us to stay in our rig. They would bring the infant to us, and they ran out of the house with an infant that they were doing CPR on, basically passed the infant off to us. My boss and coworker dealt with airway, and I dealt with getting a line. Within 13 minutes, we had an airway, we had an IO placed, and we were at the emergency room. The emergency room we went to was not terribly well-versed in pediatric patients. Generally, pediatric patients went an hour and 10 minutes away, and being in a rest as it was, and especially in a grandparent's home who was doing the caretaking, we went to the closest available hospital. When we arrived to the hospital, we had not only a staff that was very interested in what was going on and a bunch of nursing students and ourselves and a fire department that was really shocked by this because they knew the family members and we had a very, very small infant. But the social worker then also was there with the grandparents, both grandparents and the great-grandmother. And then the mother came a little later because she was at work, and then the father came later than that. Initially in the hospital, the physicians, unfortunately, the nursing staff was unfamiliar with an IO and tried to pull the IO. And when we finally got them to a point where they understood what an IO was and they continued to run the code for approximately an hour, during that time frame, there were calls made to the nearest children's hospital, as well as the social worker bringing the entire family into the trauma bay. At that point in time, the social worker attached myself to the family members. So I was the person that was explaining to mom and grandma what was going on in that room. So when they first brought mom in and they sat her down at the end of this bed, and they asked me to explain what was going on, I knelt down in front of her and needed to tell her that her baby was not breathing on its own. Her baby was not beating on its own. And her question and her eyes were like, "You mean my baby isn't doing anything for himself?" I said, "No, he's not. We are doing it all for him." At that point, you could tell that it was starting to set in that this child had very little chance. I stood up, grandma came over, basically fell into a hug over the top of me and just kept saying, "I thought I did everything right. Didn't I do everything right? I fed the baby, I burped the baby, I put the baby down, I went in to check on the baby, and the baby wasn't breathing. What did I do wrong? I thought I did everything right. How could this happen?" There's no answer to things like that. You can't answer those questions. All you can do is listen to your patients. Did I cry? I certainly did. At one point, I spoke to the mother and I said, "You know, has this child been baptized at some point during the resuscitation efforts?" And she said, "No." And I said, "Do you want this baby baptized?" And she said, "Absolutely." I said, "Okay, we can arrange for that." And just by the grace of God, we had a volunteer firefighter who was also a local minister who happened to be on scene. So I made sure that I grabbed him and said, "Look, you know, they want this baby baptized. Can we do this?" So about an hour and a half when they finally called the code, they left mom with the baby. At some point during all this, too, the father came in, and there was no consoling the father. The father acted much like you see lions in a zoo. He paced back and forth through the trauma room, and you could tell all he wanted to do was run out the door and run and run and run and run until it all went away. And you knew that wasn't going to happen. But we allowed the family to say goodbye. We cleared the trauma room and left them alone in the room. And ultimately, I came back in the room to check on, you know, what we were doing about baptism for this baby because I wanted to be sure that this mom had that peace. and found mom sitting in the corner of the room in a fetal position with her baby in her arms, still attached to all the tubes, the intubation, the IV line, everything they had him attached to, just cradling this baby and rocking back and forth on the floor in that position. Shortly after that, we got a little sterile pan, and it was the grandparents, myself, and the minister, and we baptized that baby, and we all cried. Every last one of us cried. I have a background in CISD. I helped create a team. I was a coordinator for a team for 8 years. I was one of the first people to be certified in all the CISD stuff. So I knew what I should do from this point on as far as trying to get, you know, back into it, try to do your normal thing, drink lots of water, don't be stressed. You know, you're going to be stressed. So we baptized the baby and we let it go at that. I went back to work, and the first thing I did was call my two children who were teenagers. And my son, Darren, I said, "Hey, Darren, what's up? Do you have a good day?" He's like, "What's wrong?" First thing he said, "What's wrong?" I said, "Well, we just lost a 4.5-month-old baby." And he said, "Mom, I love you." Well, that was pretty much the end of me. So I continued through my day. I went home, and I actually slept. Not in a million years did I think I would sleep that night, but I did. The next morning, I got up and got in the shower, and all I could think is, how do you function? How do you go on after you've buried your baby? How do you move on? How do you do that? And all I did was cry, and I thought, okay, Chris, you know what you're supposed to do. You need to get back up on this horse, and you need to put your uniform on and go to work. So I did that. I put my uniform on, and I went to work. And my boss, who was my partner that day because we were the fill-in ambulance, he wasn't in any much better shape than I was. I walked into his office, and he looked at me, and basically what he would do when I cried was grab the box of tissues and set it in front of me. And that's exactly what he did. He says, "This is tough." He says, "This is tough. This is one of the toughest things I've ever had to do." And I said, "Yeah, it is." He says, "But you know you need to get back out there." And I'm like, "Yeah, I know that." So I get in my ambulance. I had my regular partner that day, and off we went. I got about 3 miles down the road and became violently ill. I was definitely having a CISD reaction. I could not put this past me at that point in time. And that's what they try to teach us, is that, you know, we need to take care of ourselves, and that we need to make sure we take time, that we're allowed to grieve. You know, we're allowed to have a period of grieving, and I had not allowed myself that time. So my partner, being the awesome partner he was, pulled over, called the base, and said, "Look, she can't do this. Send her home." So they took me back to base, and I drove home, and I got home, and my youngest son was there that day, and he's like, and he knew I never came home from work, "Mom, what's wrong?" I said, "I just need a little time. I'll be fine. Can I get you anything? Can I bring you anything? Do you need ginger ale? I'll walk up to the store and get ginger ale." "Nope, I just need to sleep." And that was what I did. I slept, and you know, a while later, I was okay, and I didn't feel sick anymore. But this call has always been a teaching experience for me, to teach people that no matter how much you know and no matter how long you've been in the field, I had worked pediatric hematology for 2 years. I watched countless number of children die and watched their families go through it. But this call hit me. And if anybody takes anything away from this, is that no matter how smart you are, no matter what occurs, at some point in time, you could be the person that's having the reaction. So always be prepared for it to be your partner, your friend, the person that you never expect it to be. It can be them.
Open Airways podcasts are produced by FISDAP with support from EMSresponder.com. All recordings express the opinions and experience of the speaker and do not constitute legal or medical advice. This and other recordings can be found at www.openairways.net.